mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, several Findlay area churches are coming together to help build the spirit and faith of our community in the local observance of the National Day of Prayer. Tomorrow, we'll get details. Also this morning, Strolling Thunder. This week, parents of infants and toddlers from all 50 states rallying on Capitol Hill, advocating action on policies and access to programs they say are critical to the development of all children. And talent, technology, and taxes, the trends and top-of-mind issues among entrepreneurs from ADP's latest Market Pulse study for Small Business Week. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. Should mention right out of the gate, first thing, it is my wife's birthday today. So I wish my wife a happy birthday. If you know my wife, wish her a happy birthday today. Tell her that you heard about it from me and wish her a happy birthday. I won't say how old she is because I'm not an idiot. But honestly, I mean, does it really matter? I don't even know. Actually, I was going to say I don't even know how old she is. I don't care. But I do know how old she is. But anyway, it's my wife's birthday, so I'll mention that. And ask you to pass along the best wishes if you see my wife today. This is big news. The DEA... the DEA is moving to reclassify marijuana as a Schedule 3 drug. Currently, it is a Schedule 1 drug. So they're moving this all the way down to Schedule 3, which means it will no longer be grouped in with heroin, PCP, and crack cocaine as a drug with no accepted medical use. Schedule 3 drugs are defined as those with a moderate to low potential for dependence, and they would include things like Tylenol with codeine that you might be prescribed by your doctor, or anabolic steroids, which have a fairly moderate potential for misuse, certainly, just like Tylenol with codeine, and marijuana would seem to fit better into that category, but a moderate to low potential for dependence. The proposal recognizes the medicinal uses for marijuana for the first time at the federal level. This proposed change or reclassification will be reviewed by the White House Office of Management and Budget, but it will probably be approved because President Biden earlier this year, back in 2022, actually called for a review of federal marijuana law. So they're not removing it from the controlled substance list completely, as some had hoped, but moving it into the Schedule 3 category is a significant step. So, big news there this morning. Some of the other first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Did you hear about this guy from Mexico? Rogelio Villarreal is his name, I think. Rogelio Villarreal. Anyway, he snagged two pair of gold diamond Cartier earrings for $14 per pair. These are Cartier. They're not knockoffs. They're legitimate Cartier gold and diamond earrings. The value of each pair, $14,000. But they were on the Cartier website for just $14 per pair. Now, the error was chalked up to a conversion issue because he was in Mexico buying them in pesos, and for whatever reason, when it converted dollars to pesos, it got the formula wrong, way wrong, and they had the earrings listed for 237 pesos instead of 237,000. Oops! So Mr. Villarreal, once he spotted the error, was very quick to add them to his cart and check out. He posted about his deal online, But surprisingly, not everyone was happy for him. I think people were just jealous. One person said Cartier would probably come after him. I don't know why they would come after him, but he said that it's easy for the lawyers to demonstrate that you acted in bad faith. I don't know. They were offering the product for sale legally for a legal price, vastly underpriced, but it was up there. Anyway, it does seem like Cartier is owning up to the error and saying, oops, our bad. And Mr. Villarreal has actually received his earrings, and so it's like he can keep them. Man, that's like hitting the lottery, isn't it? $14,000. Why didn't this ever happen to me? I mean, it's my wife's birthday today, so I could use a good deal on a pair of diamond earrings. You know what I mean? Anyway, good for him. Speaking of hitting the lottery, yesterday we had a lottery story, and I was one of the guys that won the $1 billion-plus Powerball jackpot a month or so ago, and he was a cancer patient, been battling cancer for like 6 years, and so that was really kind of cool. How about this? David Atwell lives in North Carolina. Won a lottery jackpot of $837 after his sister had a dream that he had found a pot of gold. And sure enough, she says, I guess dreams do come true. He won $837,000 in the Cash 5 drawing in North Carolina. Bought his winning ticket at the Jiffy Quick in Kannapolis. And his wife, Sherry, said when he learned that he had the winning ticket, quote, he was hollering so much it scared the cat, unquote. He was hollering so much. You have to read that line with a southern accent. He was hollering so much it scared the cat. He says he plans to pay off all of his bills and donate to his church. So that's pretty cool. Let's see. A couple of other items among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. We're coming up on vacation season. And this is kind of an interesting idea. Maybe you've heard of those mystery vacations. You can actually book a mystery vacation where you don't know where you're going until you get there. They generally will tell you how to pack. Like you're going someplace warm, you don't need to pack sweaters and, you know, and jeans and all that, pack shorts and short sleeves, you know, that kind of thing. But beyond that, they don't tell you anything about where you're going. You just show up for your flight and off you go. Well, if that's a little too much for you, how about this? There are more airlines and travel agencies who are booking stopover vacations. This is like taking a long layover at the airport in between connecting flights and actually spending a day or two at your connecting city. Let stopover programs, it says here, let travelers book flights with long connections so that they can explore their layover destination. Some airlines even give travelers benefits like free hotel rooms. Air Canada, Qatar Airways, Turkish Airlines, and Copa Airlines. Just a few examples of airlines offering such programs. Connection times can last for several hours or even weeks and months if you like. So, I don't know. If you're interested, maybe look into that. Stopover programs, kind of interesting. I've been to a lot of places where you land in the airport and the airport's very nice. Phoenix is one of those. Really nice airport. I stopped at, it was not all that long ago. I flew out west. I think the last time we were in Vegas. Went through Phoenix, had a stopover, and it's a great airport, and it actually made me think, I'd kind of like to explore Phoenix, but I didn't have a whole lot of time. I have family in and around the Denver area. If I was, you know, going through Denver, it'd be kind of nice to have a few extra hours or maybe a day or two to visit family before, you know, proceeding on the rest of my trip. I can see this being very popular. Stopover programs. We mentioned some of the airlines that do this. They're, you can really do it on any airline if you, you know, are savvy about when you book and how you book your flight. You can do it yourself. But some of these airlines actually doing it on purpose themselves now, which is kind of interesting. And by the way, speaking of flying and vacation season, I thought this was kind of interesting. Engineers in the United Kingdom are experimenting with a system that could help reduce the noise that jet airplanes make. If you've ever, you know, been close to a jet airplane when it flies overhead, you know the kind of noise it makes. And if you live in a neighborhood near an airport, you know how disturbing that is, especially if it's a really busy airport, a lot of flights in and out all the time, all hours of the day and night. Well, this new innovation, it is called a boundary layer ingesting ducted fan. It is basically a fan embedded into the aircraft, not mounted under the wings where the jet engines are, but embedded into the aircraft itself, that basically, let me see here. Scientists at the University of Bristol in the UK found that the fan's noise depended on the amount of thrust being produced. Noise patterns vary with fan thrust levels, offering crucial insights for quieter next-generation aircraft design. Basically, this fan embedded into the body of the airplane nullifies, it's like a noise canceling system. It produces the counter wave that nullifies the sound of the jet engines, or at least reduces it. May not nullify it, it doesn't completely silence the airplanes, but it reduces the noise that a plane makes when it flies overhead. Dr. Feroz Ahmed says his team aims to reduce noise pollution, especially in communities around airports. But that would also be pretty cool if you're on board the airplane. You know that some of those airplanes can be very, very noisy. And to make those nice and quiet, and yeah, that's a really cool idea. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIA News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today, high around 80, mostly clear tonight, a low in the mid-50s. Raise the Bar, Hancock County held a mock interview day to prepare students for future success. More than 200 11th graders from Corey Rawson, Liberty Benton, and Van Buren High Schools participated in the event. Susan Allen, Career Network Coordinator at Liberty Benton, says the students did a great job and thanks the local business community for their tremendous support of the event.
We had over 100 people commit to come and interview our students. And the fact that the business community wants to engage with our young people is very cool. I appreciate all the help we've gotten. People want to help develop our young people, and that's a good thing.
Get more of our conversation with Susan and see some pictures from the event and the story on our website. In Toledo, a one-year-old was hospitalized after ingesting marijuana edibles.
Experts say children often think they're eating regular candy due to the colorful packaging and appealing smell and taste. So they'll eat well over the recommended dosage, which can result in dizziness, difficulty breathing, and can even put them in a coma.
WTOL 11's Dan Cummins reporting. The Cary Police Department has announced that it's been recognized for excellence in policy management and training by Lexapol, the nation's leading provider of policy training and wellness support for first responders and public servants. Get more details on how the Lexapol Connect program tracks a police department's performance in the story on our website. Marathon Petroleum is reporting its first quarter profits this year are down from last year. Marathon's reporting a net income of $937 million for the first quarter of 2024. That compares to a net income of $2.7 billion for the first quarter of last year. CEO Michael J. Hennigan says in the first quarter, they safely and successfully completed their largest planned maintenance quarter in Marathon history, including at four of their largest refineries. Get more in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, of course, as we were talking about yesterday, for more than 60 years, the Small Business Administration has celebrated National Small Business Week to acknowledge the critical contributions of America's small business owners. So what are the latest trends and top-of-mind issues among these entrepreneurs? Aaron Stark is Vice President and General Manager of Small Business Services at ADP with some of the results from ADP's latest Market Pulse study. So, Aaron, what is top of mind for small business owners right now?
Well, hey, Chris, thanks for having me and appreciate the opportunity to discuss this topic. Close to my heart of close to 18 years of doing this line of work. And, you know, that marketplace survey that you mentioned was done across a sample of our 850,000 existing clients today in the small business community. And we also onboard over 150,000 new clients every year. And what they tell us, a third of them, is growing their business is top of mind. And it sounds a little general. So if I were to unpack that or double click just a little bit, there's three main categories that tend to stand out in the conversations we have today. And they are around, I'm a small business owner. How do I acquire the best skilled talent? How do I retain the best skilled talent? How do I navigate the ever-changing regulatory compliance arena? And last but not least is, what technology, either existing or emerging, can I take advantage of that'll help me scale my business today?
Okay, so with that in mind, with those being the kind of overarching issues that dominate small business owners' thoughts right now, what trends are you seeing emerge to address those issues?
Yeah, so if I were to go in order, I'll start with the talent piece. And if I'm a small business owner, well, how do I compete for talent? You know, how do I make sure that I am in the same position as a large organization to find the best people that I could bring in with the right skills for my organization? And in yesteryear, that wasn't always the easiest thing to do because the technology that was available and the tools that you could tap into were not nearly as prevalent in the small business community as they are today. But I'll give you a perfect example. If you're trying to offer competitive wages, which is definitely one way for you to attract top talent, we now provide to the small business community here at ADP a resource called compensation benchmarking, where with a few clicks of a button, we are aggregating and anonymizing 35 million paid employees here in the U.S. from ADP, where if I'm looking for what a construction worker or a graphics designer in the state of California or Florida or New York is being paid, I can find out what those, you know, average compensations are. So that way, A, I'm not overpaying for talent, but B, I'm not underpaying and potentially limiting myself from a pool of skilled individuals that I can bring into my organization. And again, that's now being accessible and affordable and available to the small business community today. And I would say just to complement that, you know, a step further is, you know, if I'm that employee, I'm also looking for comprehensive benefits. And if you think about a average small business owner that has 5 to 10 employees, that has not always been the most affordable way to, you know, attract talent. However, there's been a ton of regulatory changes that have taken place. Another trend that we see is over 200, whether it's federal, state, payroll, tax, and HR changes. And a lot of them, you know, tend to create some headwinds for small business owners. However, some of them are opportunities where if you're looking to offer a retirement package where it provides you a opportunity for comprehensive benefits, the Secure Act, which started a couple of years ago and has continued to evolve, now provides you as a small business owner with opportunities to inject capital back into your business so you could provide services like that. Again, it kind of just levels the playing field a little bit when it comes to the talent acquisition.
Now, you were mentioning the use of technology and technological tools to help in that talent arena. Technology is, as you were mentioning, kind of its own issue unto itself. What role is technology playing I mean, obviously, in every business, technology is rapidly evolving and becoming an ever increasing part of, you know, what businesses have to think of. With respect specifically to small businesses, what role is technology playing?
I think technology is enabling and empowering the small business community, where if you think about large organizations, they tend to have pretty vast payroll departments or HR departments. And those are foreign concepts to most of the small business owners that we work with today. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Most small business owners, when they woke up on that Tuesday and they decided to take that leap of faith to, you know, provide a service or good and have that be how they afforded the roof over their head or the food on their table and the clothes on their back, they didn't necessarily have the subject matter expertise in payroll and HR. And technology is now enabling them to become those subject matter experts by codifying all that institutional knowledge that other organizations may have had access to in the past, and now putting it in a very digestible and natural language for a small business owner. If you think about emerging technologies like Gen AI, we have created a search bar within our Run application where you could just type the way that you normally would, the way that you would chat with your friend, and it will convert that into, you know, our language, and then put it back in front of you in a way in which you can take action to ensure that you're staying compliant and getting the answers to your question as if you had a degree in payroll and HR. Hmm. And I think that's some of the ways that we're really helping the small business community, you know, go toe-to-toe in today's environment with large organizations.
You also touched on regulatory and legislative issues, and that, again, is sort of a universal. You're going to see that every year. There's always questions or concerns or with, you know, related to that topic. How are small business owners adapting to this changing business environment from a regulatory and legislative standpoint?
Yeah, it's a great question. And if I were to go back to those 150,000 plus new business clients that we onboard every year, 50% of them, Chris, come from the accountant community or referred by the accountant community. And it just speaks to some of the best practices for how small business owners are adopting to the changes is by ensuring that they have the right ecosystem around them that have trusted advisors and partners and vendors that can keep them up to date on what compliance changes are on the horizon before they actually go into effect. An example of this is on July 1st, the federal government and the Department of Labor are making a change to FLSA. So let's just say you're a small business owner out there right now that has a half a dozen employees, and a couple of them are salaried employees that today are not subject because they are exempt from overtime.
Mm-hmm.
On July 1st, there's going to be an increase in that minimum salary that would enable you to be exempt from overtime. And as a small business owner, you're going to have to start to make considerations starting today here in, you know, in April, May of, well, am I going to just increase their salaries? Do I convert them to an hourly employee? Do I start to invest in infrastructure with time and attendance applications where they are paid hourly and I can see how many overtime hours that they actually incur to see which one is the most cost efficient methodology for my business? So that way I can not only survive this change, but I can continue to thrive, you know, past that legislative change that's coming down the pipe.
As you look at the results of this Market Pulse study, this latest one, is there anything that jumped out at you that maybe was surprising or, you know, you look at and say, this is it in a nutshell to describe, you know, the unique place that we are right now with respect to the state of small business?
Yeah, I think one of the areas was around how small businesses today are looking to upskill or reskill the talent that they have. You know, 90% of the small business owners that we surveyed are looking to invest in some type of, you know, skill development, specifically around critical thinking and problem solving. If, you know, my assumptions are some of the technology is probably beginning to offset the tactical work that may have been done in the past and,
yeah. You
know, starting to aggregate a lot of really rich data or knowledge, but the application of that knowledge, I think, is where a lot of companies are looking to invest in developing their associates and employees. And some of the ways in which ADP is trying to help them navigate that is, as much regulatory compliance might be viewed as a obstacle, there are other opportunities in the 3,000 incentives and or tax credits that are available to the small business community in research and development, work opportunities, tax credits. And if you go to ADP.com/tax credits, there are experts that can help you navigate which ones are applicable to you. And how can you tap into the right resources that can inject that capital into your business so you can then afford to deploy those resources in upskilling your employees today?
Again, Aaron Stark is Vice President General Manager of Small Business Services at ADP, talking about the latest Market Pulse study, which you have on the website as well, right?
We do. If you go to ADP.com/small business, you can find not only more information on the Market Pulse survey, but also a lot of other extensive information beyond the topics that we've discussed today.
Aaron, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Well, you know, I would like to think that even in a country as divided as we are today, that everyone or nearly everyone could agree that the future of our children and their safety is critical. But our next guest says that for millions of families, the well-being and outcomes of a child's life can be determined simply by where they live and their access, or more specifically, lack of access to policies and programs that provide good health and high-quality care. And that's why yesterday, the organization called 0-3 organized a rally on Capitol Hill, their 8th annual so-called Strolling Thunder Rally, with the goal of having parents from all 50 states flood the halls of the U.S. Capitol with their little ones in strollers to demand action on important family policies like paid leave, maternal health, child care access, and quality health care for infants and toddlers. Earlier this week, ahead of that rally, we spoke with Matthew Melmed, executive director of 0-3. How serious is this concern in Northwest Ohio? When we talk about access to these policies and programs, I think most people picture either impoverished urban areas or remote rural areas. And by and large, we are neither. So what is the state of babies, if you will, in our part of the country? Does this really impact us directly?
Yeah, no question. It's harder than ever to raise a baby in the United States. And families with young children are finding it more difficult to make ends meet. In Ohio, in your state, there are nearly 400,000 babies and toddlers that live in Ohio, and nearly 44% of them live in households that have incomes less than twice the federal poverty line. And we know that every baby deserves a strong start in life, and babies' brains develop faster from birth to age 3 than at any other time in life. And public policy can really help ensure that babies get that best possible start in life. But policies have not kept up with the needs of today's parents and caregivers.
So let's talk about that. How would you want policymakers, how are you advocating that policymakers can implement legislation to bridge that gap? You say that the legislation is not kept up, so what do you advocate for to bring that up to speed?
There are a range of supports that babies and toddlers and their families need. We should not be in a state of the union now where for parents, it's literally impossible for them to find quality, affordable child care for their children. They can't access programs like Early Head Start. When there are developmental delays or other issues affecting a child's development where they can't find providers and pay for them, the fact that we do not have a national and permanent paid and family medical leave program is outrageous compared to where we are in relationship to virtually every other industrialized country in the world. The fact that we do not provide extra support for those parents from who are experiencing trying to raise a baby in times when things are so expensive. So we need to reinstate the fully refundable child tax credit that we had during the pandemic. So there are any number of issues that parents are going to be coming to Capitol Hill today and talking directly with their representatives about.
What about the argument that this is something that is just unaffordable, that private businesses can't afford mandates for paid family leave, that the government can't afford to expand the kind of programs that you're advocating for? What about the affordability argument?
I think that the question is not the right one. The question is, can we afford not to make these investments? The United States is looking at a declining birth rate. We're looking at an increased diversity in the nature of the babies that are being born. This is our future workforce. This is our future economy. If we are not investing at this stage in life, when we know the brain and the dentity is growing faster than any other point, we are weakening the foundation upon which our economy rests. And so the question is, can we not afford it? If we don't do it now, when do we do it? We end up making up for it years later with special education costs, with other challenges that some populations of babies and toddlers when they grow up have. This is the time. The ultimate prevention point is when we're at the earliest years of life.
I understand exactly what you're saying, and I get the concept. And again, it's hard to argue with that. But to put it in terms that, again, are relatable to what we're talking about here, families that are strapped for cash, whose budgets are strapped, you can tell them feeding your children healthy food is, you know, you can't afford not to, but if they look at their bank account and they can't afford that healthy food, the money is not just there. By extension, isn't that what we're talking about? Yes, you're right. All of these things are very critical, and yes, there is a greater cost on down the line, but that doesn't change the fact that there is a cost to be borne by these programs that you are advocating, both in terms of public cost, taxpayer cost, and cost to private business.
Yes, but if we're looking at trying to reduce the remedial cost that we spend in special education in schools, for example, we could be, if we're able to identify early on for developmental challenges or delays that babies and toddlers have and address them, we will be saving so much money down the line. For babies and toddlers who experience abuse or neglect or trauma early in their lives, if we're not addressing those early, we're going to be paying for that later on in terms of what we see in our criminal justice system. All of this is logical. It makes sense. We end up paying so much after the fact for things that we can address early on.
No question, although as you well know, getting Americans and their representatives in Washington to look beyond the immediate to the big picture is sometimes a pretty heavy lift. So with that in mind, with respect to the rally this week, how will you judge it a success? What do you hope will directly come out of this?
Well, members of Congress are used to having lobbyists representing industries as diverse as the pork producers to the insurance industry in those halls, lobbying them every day. What they're not used to is seeing real families with babies and toddlers and strollers rolling through those halls, meeting with them and telling them about their real life stories and challenges and offering to them what the solutions look like. We look in the United States, babies only make up about 3% of our population, but they're supported in less than 2% of the federal budget. And we've had economists, including a Nobel laureate from the University of Chicago, no liberal institution there, who have pointed out that if we make investments in the earliest part of life, we're going to bring down long-term costs in other systems over time. So they're there bringing a real-life face to the story and helping members of Congress understand why they need to think babies.
Again, Matthew Melmed is executive director of Zero to Three with his rally this week at the U.S. Capitol. Where do folks learn more about your organization and the priorities that you are advocating for?
Thank you. Yeah, they can go to Zero to Three, spelled out as one word, ZeroToThree.org.
Matthew, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Here's our latest unusual theft in the broken news. Apparently, some crooks with a taste for seafood hit a market in Seattle recently. The Seattle Fish Guys posted on Instagram that their seafood market and restaurant was robbed. Thieves took cash, checks, equipment, and 100 pounds of their finest smoked salmon. I can just see this burglary in progress, and the thieves saying, get the cash. Oh, and don't forget the salmon. Forget to grab the salmon. 100 pounds of it. They say, despite the setback, Seattle Fish Guys plan to return stronger than ever and reopen for business right away. They are also asking for help in finding the suspects. If anyone sees someone selling Seattle Fish Guys smoked salmon, contact the police immediately. Somebody comes up to you and say, hey, want to buy some salmon? Comes up to you on the street, offers to buy some salmon. It may be hot. This is kind of unusual. From the international file, the community of Fujikawa Guchiko in Japan, I think I have that right, but probably not. This town in Japan has found itself in an unusual situation. It has been bombarded with unruly tourists taking advantage of the town's spectacular view of Mount Fuji. It is like the most photographed tourist site in Japan, but people have been flooding this small town because of its picturesque views of Mount Fuji, and they have had enough. Too many tourists. So, city officials have decided to build a large black screen to obstruct the view. A local cafe owner tells the Associated Press she is happy to see the tourists, but the numbers have surged since the pandemic. The numbers have surged since the pandemic shut down tourism, but it is the behavior of the tourists, littering, crossing the road in front of busy traffic, ignoring traffic lights, trespassing onto private properties. It's their behavior that has her concerned. The town has tried several conventional measures to keep the unruly guests in check, but since nothing has seemed to work thus far, the only option that they have left is to construct an 8-foot by 65-foot screen to block the view. So that's what they've decided to do. For the time being, at least, tourists will have to settle for a postcard. So I guess if you're a business that sells postcards, you like the idea, that's for sure. Building a giant 8-foot-tall, 65-feet-long screen. It ain't the Great Wall of China. It's the great screen of Fujikawa Guchiko. That may end up being a tourist attraction in and of itself, I would think. Elsewhere in the broken news, speaking of tourism and unruly tourists, a tourist from Idaho arrested after witnesses said that they saw him kicking a bison at Yellowstone National Park. You heard me right. Kicking a bison. It strikes me as very unwise thing to do. Rangers responding to the call took 40-year-old Clarence Yoder first to a medical center for treatment of injuries. Because you can't kick a bison and not get injured. The bison doesn't take too kindly to that. After he was treated, he was transported to the county detention center. Mr. Yoder charged with approaching and disturbing wildlife, along with other charges related to being under the influence. What a surprise! There was some kind of intoxicating substance involved. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Yellowstone National Park guidelines tell visitors to stay at least 25 yards away from the bison. They're 2,000 pounds. And I know he was charged with disturbing the wildlife, but the wildlife disturbed him, too. The wildlife will disturb you if you disturb them. You can't blame them. Kicking a bison. Not particularly bright. This also from the International File. Susan Johnson had an interesting day when she visited the Bridlington Hospital in England for a routine scan, only to be told that she had died 4 months prior. She says, I gave them my paperwork, and their first words were, oh, you're dead. Pardon me? Oh, you're dead. She's 62 years old. She said, upon hearing that she had died, she said, she pointed out the error. Fortunately, it was quickly fixed. This is how you can tell the difference between the healthcare system in this country and that of England. They quickly fixed the error. Somebody came in and said, you know, they looked at her and said, clearly she's alive, and they fixed the error. In this country, this would take months, maybe years, to sort out. The courts probably would have to get involved to sort all of this out. Ms. Johnson said the entire experience left her shaking like a leaf. She wants to find out why she was listed as dead, how she was listed as dead, and by whom was she listed as dead. But the good part of the story is that she has been designated as alive, so she's fine. The story does have a happy ending there. And finally, in the broken news this morning, I am not a slave to fashion, so this seems a little odd to me. Maybe if you are a fashionista, you can understand this. And if so, please explain it to me. Jordan Bowen and Luca Marchetto have a fashion label, Jordan Luca, a combination of their names, Jordan Luca. And their fashion label has unveiled its latest creation. And I'm not kidding about this. It's actually real. Jeans, regular denim jeans, that make it look as though you have wet yourself. That's right. The brand is selling jeans that make it look as if you have wet yourself. They're called stain jeans, and believe it or not, they are already sold out. The label debuted the new offering as part of its fall and winter catwalk collection, and although the darker denim with the far more noticeable intentional accident is no longer available, a stonewash version is still available on the Jordan Luca website. The stain jeans feature a stonewash stain on the private area. And let's see here, the label's logo on embroidered in each back pocket, making it the ultimate Jordan Luca denim piece, according to the website's description. The ultimate Jordan Luca denim piece. And they are on sale. Now, they are discounted on sale for a mere $608. $608 discounted from the regular price of $811. Vogue Business recently revealed that sales for the edgy designers jumped 15% in 2023 versus the year prior, to the tune of around $500,000. Pre-stained jeans. All righty then. I don't even know what to say. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming. I have to run to the bathroom.
Who are the people that serve part-time in the Ohio Army National Guard? We are your neighbors and friends. We are your sons and daughters. Our service is providing us valuable job skills, and it pays up to 100% of our tuition. We're proud to serve our state. We are your Ohio Army National Guard. Learn more about part-time service with the Ohio Army National Guard at nationalguard.com/OH.
Sponsored by the Ohio Army National Guard. Aired by the Ohio Association of Broadcasters and this station.
And now, your daily download. The numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The strong labor market is one metric that the Fed may use this week to delay the interest rate cut that many had been hoping for. But according to a new poll, many Americans just aren't buying it. In fact, a quarter of all working adults, 25%, fear that they are going to lose their job this year. One in four believe they're going to lose their job this year. That's one of the takeaways of a new poll commissioned by CSU Global, which showed that the pressure is on at work as artificial intelligence is on the rise. 25% of the 2,000 adults in the survey say that they are stressed about the job market, with 22% of those saying that they are already in an unstable industry. They are working in an unstable industry is how they describe it. 55% of respondents say that they have been doing the same job for years, and 32% admit that they have fallen behind in their skills in that time. 54% say that their skill set is outdated, particularly for the 64% of those polled who graduated in 2000 or earlier. Graduating back in the 20th century instead of the 21st. And it does happen. You feel as though your skill set has become outdated over time. And that makes you particularly vulnerable, at least according to those in the survey. As far as hanging on to the job they have, 42% say that they are willing to take on more work, and 30% say that they would like to contribute above their pay grade, so to speak. Interesting. Maybe that is why, in a separate survey of 2,000 employed Americans, 29% of workers say that they have secretly worked while on vacation, even. Because either they don't want to fall behind, they don't want to be perceived as slacking off, they have an important deadline to meet. 29% of workers say that they have secretly worked while on vacation. And 26% say that they work while traveling to save their PTO for a future time. So it's not always for the benefit of the employer. Sometimes it's for the benefit of the worker. But nonetheless, it's an interesting survey there, too, on how many of us actually work when we're supposed to be on R&R. So tomorrow, as you may already know, is the National Day of Prayer, and several Findlay area churches coming together to help build the spirit and faith of our community and the local observance. Pastor Dan Metzger from St. Mark's United Methodist Church is kind of running point on this. You are the head honcho, the grand poobah, yeah. Large and in charge.
No, I'm just the sucker who said yes.
Or that too. Talk a little bit about this. Will be held tomorrow at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, and it is really a day-long event.
Yeah, we're doing things a little bit differently this year. We're going to have a day-long event at the Marathon Center for Performing Arts. It's going to run from about 8 o'clock till about 7 o'clock or so, and it's going to be kind of a come-and-go experience. Every hour on the hour, a different church is going to kind of take point and lead us through the day, kind of helping to guide our time of prayer and of maybe a little bit of teaching and maybe just a little bit of time of community and contemplation together. So it should be a really great event, great opportunity to get everybody to kind of come together.
One of the things that is we are blessed in this community to have such a strong faith community, and this really demonstrates that with all of the congregations or parishes coming together.
Yeah, absolutely. We have about 10 to 12 churches that are participating in some official capacity. I was kind of looking through trying to get a number, but I think that with a Findlay address, there are more than 70 different faith communities. And so there's a lot to choose from, and I tend to believe that we need that there's no one church that's going to pastor all of Findlay, that that we all need one another. We need these different flavors, if you will, of being able to reach out to our community. And so this is a great opportunity for us. A lot of us are doing our own thing on Sunday mornings and don't spend a whole lot of time together in worship or in prayer. So this is an opportunity for us to be able to come together and
do that. Is that really the way you look at this event? I know for me, one of the things that I like about the National Day of Prayer is that it is not connected to any single denomination or particular practice or any organized religion at all, for that matter. It is an opportunity for people to find that common denominator.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, the Findlay community is I would say a majority Christian, but we have a lot of different. We've got everything from the Catholic Church to Pentecostal churches to Presbyterian to Lutheran, Methodist, and so on and so on, non-denominational. And so we do all have a little bit of a different way that we might go about praying or that we might go about doing these things. And we haven't asked anybody who is coming to be anything other than who they are. You know, I don't expect you know, one church to come in and try to sound like us or for us to try to sound like somebody else. You know, one of the beautiful things about this country is that you are free to practice your religion as you see fit. And so we want that to be kind of reflected tomorrow. But I think it's a beautiful thing that we can come together and that there are things that we do hold in common. And I think it was Augustine who said, in essentials, unity, in non-essentials, liberty, in all things, charity. And so the thing that's, you know, there are some things that we think are essential and good that we can come together in agreement on.
And at the same time, celebrating those differences that do make us, it's not something to shy away from.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad that we have, I'm glad that we have churches that are able to, speak into our community and our culture in a way that I can't. And I'm glad that we can in ways that others can't. And I think that's a good thing. And so anytime that there's people who are coming together, pray for our community, for our country, for our world, and especially around the way that we're kind of theming this year. I think it's a good thing.
So how are you theming it this year? So kind of talk a little bit about the overarching purpose and the message that you were hoping to deliver.
Sure. So when we started some of this conversation earlier this year, we kind of said, you know, a lot of times I think there's plenty of things that kind of separate us, divide us, you know, move us away from each other. What if we came together around some themes of things that we really want to lift up? And so we chose the fruit of the Spirit from Galatians 5. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control.
That pretty much covers it all, right?
Yeah, and so we believe that these are the things that when these things are present, that must mean that God is present in some way. Mm-hmm. And so we are, every church has kind of taken one of those themes. And so each hour will be around one of those themes, and that church will teach and lead prayer on that theme during that time. And I've been so thankful for all of the other pastors that I reached out to who said, yeah, absolutely, we are in, we want to be a part of this, and are willing to take a little bit of time on a on a Thursday, mm-hmm. Some of the middle of the day kind of thing, say, no, this is an important thing for us to do for our community.
And through it all, I know this is not necessarily a recruitment drive, as it were, but certainly I'm sure that on some level there is a hope that someone may stop by and feel moved to participate in the National Day of Prayer, that may find a church home that they have been missing.
I did see somebody comment on Facebook saying, man, if you're looking for a church, you can go test them all out in one place at one time.
You can get a test drive.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the idea is not to steal sheep and move them from one church to another. But yeah, if you are looking for a church home and these are the pastors that I've had a chance to work with are all great people, and hopefully you would maybe find somewhere that would be a good fit for you.
And maybe also breaking down some of those preconceived notions that some people have about what the church is and what the church is all about.
Yeah, sometimes I think we get known for what we're against, mm-hmm. Instead of what we're for. Yeah.
Especially these days.
Oh, absolutely. So this is a chance for us to say, these are the ties that bind us, mm-hmm. And for us to be able to lift all of those things up. Yeah.
So the National Day of Prayer Observance is happening tomorrow. Again, give us all of the details.
Yeah. So it's going to be tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Marathon Center. We're going to start with worship in the morning in the Donnell Theater. We'll move into the Arms Room for most of the day, and then we're going to actually close with worship at 5:30, led by Cedar Creek, that's going to be back in the Donnell Theater. And so it'll be a great time together. One thing I will note, if you're coming for it, there's, I believe, a farmer's market happening in the main parking lot during the day. So park in the back parking lot. We'd love to have you come and be a part of it.
All right. Again, Pastor Dan Metzger with St. Mark's United Methodist Church with us this morning, the local observance of the National Day of Prayer tomorrow. And thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning, sometimes small business owners can't do it alone. Recognizing those who invest in those entrepreneurs and take a chance on their dreams. Plus, we have details on the inaugural Findlay Food for All, a collaborative event of the United Way City Mission and Chopin Hall to address food insecurity in the community. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.